Blog Talk Radio.
You ready?
It's time to start.
This should be played at high volume.
This is the Andrea Shea Game Show.
And I'm just a gal like any other gal.
That's cool.
You know what this is.
What is this?
The Andrea Shea Game Show.
It's me, don't you remember?
We were just talking about you.
Totally amazing.
Thank you.
The Andrea Shea Game Show.
I think you've got something there.
Andrea Shea King.
You're really going to like it.
Quite understandable.
Is on the air.
Something's definitely going on here.
Take my word for it.
Now.
Come on. It's showtime.
Make it so.
Ready, go.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the program on this Wednesday night, January 31st, the night of the blue moon. The blood moon, really, actually, huh? Did you see it come up tonight? Oh, it was beautiful here. Absolutely beautiful. Clear sky, and just I wasn't standing on the beach, so I didn't see it come up over the Atlantic, but I'm sure that it made quite a sight. Anyway, here we are, and we're going to be talking with Elizabeth Crist of Congress College, as she likes to be described. She's a retired U.S. Senate Secretary for the Majority. She's going to join us this evening. We've got a whole bunch of things that we're going to be talking about with her. Let's see. Here's my laundry list. Trey Gowdy announcing that he's going to be leaving. He's not going to be sticking around to run for re-election for Congress. And a lot of speculation is accompanying that. Some people are saying, you know, it's time for him to go. He's compromised. And, oh, no, don't go, Trey. Don't go. We love you. So it runs the gamut. We've got nine GOP committee chairs that have announced that they are leaving. They're not going to run for re-election. 34 congressional members, many of them, if not all of them, are GOP. Kind of interesting. I think that what's happening here is that they know it's a new day, and it's going to get nastier. We're also going to be talking about the midterms, as long as we're talking about people who are dropping out midterms. And Elizabeth has some information on the possibility of some Democrats switching from Democrat to Republican, crossing the aisle. We're also going to be talking about some last night's State of the Union address, of course, and the Democrats' response to it. If you've been listening to talk radio today, or even if you've been listening to Fox, you probably know that people were talking all about the Democrats last night, how the Black Congressional Caucus just sat there and they looked miserable. And what was it that Nancy Pelosi was doing with her mouth? My sister and I were talking today, and she said that a friend of hers told her that people who are on antidepressants tend to do that with their mouth. I've never heard of that, but maybe you have. To me, I just think that she looks like she's on medication. And I suspect that it's probably Namenda, which is medication for Alzheimer's. Just a guess. I don't know. I mean, I'm just guessing. But she's awfully strange. Awfully strange. And I don't know. Anyway, I don't know. We'll talk about that. Also, the polling accuracy. The polls that they're throwing out there right now. That President Trump has a 38% approval rating, yada, yada, yada. Let me tell you something. President Trump knows exactly what he's doing, and the polls that they're not telling you about are the polls that we'll talk about tonight with Elizabeth. Okay. Also, upcoming budget issues, what's going to happen at the end of February. Is it the end of February? I don't even remember what the date is for the expiration. I think it's February 8th, isn't it? I think it's coming right up. So what's going to happen? The Democrats are implacable. They don't want to do anything. And I was watching, I was so glad to see Buck Sexton on with the special report all-star panel. I think he is one of the sharpest guys out there, and I used to love watching him on Glenn Beck's television show, Real News. Remember they had Real News? And he was a regular, and he was just so informative. He was so informed, former CIA, I think, analyst, and just has it. He's all coached up. He's got it. So anyway, he was on tonight, and he was, you know, they were talking about what are the Democrats going to do? I mean, they can't sit there on their hands for the next year. We saw the accomplishments that Trump has made in his first year of the administration, and we know that it's going to continue. It's going to continue. He's got the momentum. He's got the wind at his back now, and What are they going to do to stop him? The only thing that they have at this point in time is this memo, this whole Comey, McCabe, Mueller situation. And I think that we're watching this blow up in their faces. So we're going to talk about that. Also, let's see. Oh, horrible thing today happening with that train situation. You know, we had members of the House on that train with their families and their staff, and they were traveling to Greenbrier, I think it's Virginia. Is it Virginia or Maryland? I think it's Virginia, for a retreat, a two-day retreat, which Elizabeth had mentioned last week that they were going, that this was on their calendar. And they were on their way today. The train was hit by they say it's a dump truck, but it looked to me like an 18-wheeler that was hauling refuse. Driver was killed. Horrible, horrible accident. I'm sure it was awful to see. But some people, I was reading on Twitter, are asking, was this a false flag attack? Because, you know, Q last week was warning about FF, false flag, that if this thing with the memo gets a little wiggy and they get real desperate, they might pull something to distract America. I don't know. Who knows? Okay, so we're going to talk about all of that with her. Now, let me say hi to the folks who are joining us tonight. We've got Bring It, Boy. Hi, Bring It. We got Flycatch. We got several guests in the chat room. We've also got Golf Dogs, John Pizzuto, Lugnut, and Robert Anthony. Nice to see you in there. We also have listening to us on the phone is area code 260-570-931-401 and 518. Welcome one, welcome all. You can join them on the telephone, listen into the show on the telephone line by calling into 646-478-4604. Yeah, okay. And I want to say thank you to everybody who wished me a happy birthday today. Yes, it's my birthday. And I got a lot of wonderful greetings over on Facebook. You know what's amazing to me? Truly is amazing. You know, it's like when you drop a pebble or a rock into a pond and it ripples outward and outward and outward. And finally, it just ripples out so far that it hits the shore or whatever. But it's like that. You never know who you're touching. You just never know who you're touching. And I got so many well wishes today from people that I don't know. I mean, I don't know them. Maybe they're on my friend list. I don't know. I've got over 1,000 people on my friend list. I don't know. But it was so nice because a lot of these people were saying, thank you for what you're doing. Thank you for all your posts. Thank you for letting us know what's going on. And it was like, oh, my gosh, you like me. You really like me. No, it wasn't that at all. It was just I was reminded again of what a big responsibility it is to make sure that what I'm posting and what I'm talking about is true. And that if it isn't true, that I come back to you afterwards and say, oops, I goofed, not true. So anyway, thank you all, everybody, for your birthday wishes. I really appreciate it. 1 year older. Yep, 1 year older. Getting better. Well, we're not getting any younger, right? No, I know. Gosh, time goes by fast. Also, I wanted to tell you that I was listening to Lionel Nation today. Lionel Nation is out of New York, and I guess, I don't know, he's a lawyer by profession and talk show host. And he's a guest, frequent guest on a lot of different talk shows, and he's got this really weird voice, and he's kind of funny. Sometimes I can take him better than other times. He kind of goes off on tangents, kind of like I do. But today he really did an excellent, excellent podcast. It's 28 minutes long. And in it, he talks about the media and people's feelings about politics and their feelings about their party. And how they seek out that media which feeds them their already preconceived feelings. And it was, I mean, he took apart last night's State of the Union address, and I thought he did a great job. He was very fair about it. it's well worth your time to listen to it after the show, or maybe sometime whenever you have time. Pop it in, plug it in, click it on, and listen. I've put the link in the chat room. As a matter of fact, I'm going to put the link in again because I know that there, you know, that you're, the chat window rolls fast when people are chatting a lot, so it goes off the screen. So let me go ahead and drop it in again. And for those of you who are listening on the phone, I will just tell you, go to YouTube and type in Lionel Nation and go to the video that is labeled hashtag Trump's hashtag so too was magnificent. Deep State Pelosi and her band of cretins are ideologically AWOL. Okay? Trump's so too was magnificent. He did it today. He published it today. I'm not sure what time it went up. I have no idea because they don't put the time down. But I listened to it twice. And I posted a comment on it. I said to him, well done. The best assessment of last night's so too, 28 minutes of reality humorously delivered by Lionel Nation. So if you get a chance, it's worth your time. Okay, let me move that tab out of the way. And also some of the things that folks were talking about on social media had to do with let me get to it here. The FBI opposing the memo release due to, quote, inaccurate information. I don't know if you saw this or not. This was Tyler Durden. It's a pseudonym. In what CNN described as a rare public warning, the FBI released a statement today saying it has grave concerns over the accuracy of the House Intel Committee's memo describing purportedly egregious FISA abuses. Now, what my understanding is that not only Rod Rosenstein, but Christopher Wray, the director of the FBI, have both gone to the White House and said they oppose the release of this classified memo. Now, I'm a little confused here. The FBI put out a statement about it. And who authorized this statement? Did this statement come from Christopher Wray? I don't know. Just before President Trump headed to the Capitol last night for the State of the Union, the Washington Post was reporting that top Justice Department officials had made a last-ditch plea on Monday, this would have been the night before last, to White House Chief of Staff John Kelly about the dangers of publicly releasing the memo. Shortly before the House Intelligence Committee voted to make the document public, Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein warned Kelly, John Kelly, the Chief of Staff, White House, that the four-page memo prepared by the House Republicans could jeopardize classified information and implored the president to reconsider his support for making it public. Really? Last night, President Trump promised a lawmaker, as he was walking out of the House chamber, that the memo would be 100% released. Now that the House Intel Committee has voted to approve its release. I'm a little confused about this. Can anybody shed some light on this? Anybody? Bueller? Yeah, why so scared? I don't know. It's a bit of a mystery. A bit. Adam Schiff. Oh, he is. This is a guy who looks like he's perpetually scared. Either that or having a suppository inserted somewhere. Ooh, those big eyes. Ooh. Anyway, he's saying that the FISA memo could lead to firings of Mueller and Rosenstein. Well, as Farmer Jones, another video I watched, the guy with the deep, deep voice, like the John B. Wells voice, as he would say, well now. Anyway, again, Tyler Durden, this was published today. Stocks are red. Trey Gowdy is abruptly retiring from Congress. Everybody's laughing at what looks like drool dribbling from the edge of Joe Kennedy's mouth during his rebuttal to last night's State of the Union. And along comes Reuters, dropping a bombshell headline that, if accurate, could shift the narrative of the multiple investigations involving Russia and obstruction of justice. Reuters quoted Adam Schiff, the top Democrat on the House Intel Committee, who believes the contents of the four-page memo about allegedly egregious FBI abuses of FISA, set for public release in the next several days, could lead to the firing of Special Counsel Bob Mueller or, more likely, Deputy AG Rod Rosenstein. Now, the question is whether this is a statement of fact. In other words, the FISA memo contains cause for termination, or a smokescreen to claim that Mueller's firing is only made possible by the political act that is the imminent release of the FISA memo. Also heard today that Andrew McCabe has been put on house arrest. Don't have any proof. It's out there on social media. Somebody tweeted it. Somebody on one of those tweet sites that usually has pretty good information. But they didn't link it. They didn't back it up. They just dropped it in there. And I don't know how valid this is. We'll find out sooner or later, right? Yeah, we'll know. We'll find out. Eventually, we'll know. So, okay, so there's that. Let's see. What else? What else? Oh, I found this thread over at Draw and Strike. This is, by the way, this is a good tweet, Twitter guy to follow. He goes by the name of Stealth Jeff, as in Jeff Sessions, Stealth Jeff, at Draw and Strike. Draw and Strike, okay? So it's Stealth Jeff. You can find him by going to Twitter and typing in the search bar, Stealth Jeff, two words, or Draw and Strike, which is all one word, okay? So let me tell you some of the people that I'm following on Twitter. This guy, okay? Another guy, he calls himself Trump, I think it's Trump Defender. It's Dave NY the 8th, VIII. Dave NY VIII. See, when you come to this show, you need to come with paper and pencil because you never know what I'm going to be throwing out at you, right? Right, okay. So Dave NY VIII. The other one that's pretty good is Imperator Rex, and you've heard me talk about him before. Imperator, Imperator, underscore Rex, and that would be Rex, and the number 3. Imperator underscore Rex 3. Draw and Strike is the other one I just mentioned. Let's see. Praying Medic. Praying Medic, PrayingMedic, Praying Medic. Tracy Beans, TracyBeanz, she's pretty good. I always follow Thomas 1774 Payne. He's excellent, excellent. So those are some of the names that you might want to pay attention to when next time you're out there swimming through the morass of Twitter. Yeah. All right. We've got Congress College's Elizabeth Crist, who's a retired U.S. Senate Secretary for the Majority, joining us this evening. And we've got a lot to talk. The State of the Union Address, Democrats who might be switching over to the Republican Party. We're going to talk about the midterms. We're going to talk about the memo and the train accident today, and why the GOP members of the House were on their way to this retreat, all of that. So without any further ado, let me bring Elizabeth on live with us. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hey, Andrea, and I want to say live on your show, if you don't mind, happy birthday, sweet friend.
Oh,
I don't know if you've told
you.
People today is her birthday.
Yep, 1 year older and deeper in debt.
Yep.
Is that how the song goes?
There
yeah.
you go.
Thank
Happy
you.
Birthday.
Thank
I
you.
Hope it was a good one.
It was great. I ate ice cream all day.
There you go. Okay, that's worth it.
Well, some people drink. You know, some people celebrate with booze. I celebrate with vanilla ice cream.
That's okay. Oh, the good old-fashioned yeah. American apple pie and ice cream. Well, yep. Happy birthday.
Thank you. Thank you very much. So I know you watched the State of the Union Address. Let's start with that. What did you think? What were your impressions of it? And overall, do you think he scored a hit?
I think he scored an absolute home run. Best line of it, in my view, was Americans are dreamers too. And what I believe he's done with the speech and what he was trying to do and making his way by doing all really this whole year, and of course we're obviously just in the last day of January, but really all of January since the passing of the tax bill is to get back to, or not get back to, but sort of italicize or make even more important, highlight that we're Americans and the American patriotism and all of that. And he did that last night on steroids. And it made the Democrats look awkward because they couldn't stand for it, for statements like we love our flag and we're all Americans. And America is making America great again. Our citizens are. Those kind of statements over and over and over again. And really, the Democrats struggled to applaud that. They struggled to stand up for that. So I think if the average American that's sort of sitting on the fence a little bit politically would look and go, what's wrong? Why are they such sourpusses? What's up with that? I think he's making that point over and over again. And, you know, let's not forget that when he went into the immigration issue, when he went into the infrastructure issue, he named things they've all been asking for. I mean, they've been asking for these provisions. He said, let's work together and do it. And no, they sat on their hands. They frowned. They sat on their hands. They looked around. They picked at their fingernails. They did everything but clap or even act like they were halfway interested. It was pretty surprising. And I say that coming from a place where I've been in many leadership meetings where there were leaders in the Republican Party that didn't want to necessarily stand up and jump up and down for a Democratic president. But we were all, I'll just say it this way, we were all taught, you go, you clap, you applaud, if you agree with the line, basically, and you show respect for the office. I mean, they barely showed respect. I guess being in the room was their best they could do as far as showing respect for the office. But that was a pretty low bar, if you ask me.
Did you see, and they somebody grabbed a clip of it and was running it on social media, the part where Joe Manchin, the camera was looking down, you were looking down at Joe Manchin, and at some point the president said something that elicited an applause. It was an applause line, and the Republicans stood, gave him a standing ovation, and Joe Manchin went to stand up. And then he looked to his left and he looked to his right and realized he would have been the only one standing. So he sat back in his seat. Did you see that?
Mm-hmm. I did. But I don't know if you noticed a little further along in the speech, he decided he better start standing. So he stood, notwithstanding what his colleagues were doing. He did.
Oh,
he stood
did.
He did. It was a little later on, but he did. And, you know, we talked a little bit last week, and I know you and I have been on email talking about how he's gotten a little bit of his nerve to put together this coalition. I know we talked about this last week,
Common
Sense Coalition.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
he has figured out, finally, I say, and I say it that way because, geez, what took him so long? It doesn't take much with this many tiny, tiny, tiny majority that the Republicans have to realize – You give three or four votes to the Republicans and you can be a rock star. You can be like wow factor to the leader. I mean, it's just that simple. It's the numbers game. But nonetheless, he's figured it out, and this Common Sense Coalition, I think, has empowered him a little bit. I think that's showing to him, I can't continue to walk this plank. I represent the state of West Virginia. The Democratic Party has raped and pillaged and all but bankrupt my major industry, which is coal. I'm hanging on by my fingernails. And you want me to keep poking these guys in the eye over and over and over and over and over again? I can't do that. I can't do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I can see him getting more and more bold. I can see him with more and more initiatives. I see him being a real power broker when it comes to immigration. I see him being a real power broker when it comes to the infrastructure bill. Absolutely.
Huh.
West Virginia has some issues. And for those of you that have been to West Virginia and driven on their highways, they're beautiful. The whole state is beautiful. Half of the state's named after Robert C. Byrd. Robert C. Byrd Highway, the Robert C. Byrd Turnpike, the Robert C. Byrd Bridge. Mm-hmm. I said that a little tongue-in-cheek, but the point is they have spent thanks to Senator Robert C. Byrd, having been the Senate Majority Leader, having been the Senate Minority Leader, having been the Chairman of the Appropriations Committee, and having been the President Pro Tem. That's a long way of saying he'd been there a long time. I think he got to the Senate in 1959 and died 6 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So he'd been
there
a long time. By the time he had left, half of the state was either named after him or he was responsible for bringing a lot to the state. That's what they expect of their senator.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the bar has just been set very, very high for Joe Manchin, and he took Senator Byrd's place when he passed away. He was the governor.
And by the way, I just want to remind everybody that Robert Byrd was one of Hillary Clinton's mentors, and he was also the Grand Kugel of the KKK. So this guy, for whatever the mores and values were of the day, that they accepted Robert Byrd in the Congress on Capitol Hill, he came with his own sheets in his closet, and Hillary Clinton and him. So this casts some aspersions to me on Robert Byrd, but nevertheless, it's obvious that he did a lot for his state. That they were naming.
And that's the bar. That's the reference I'm trying to reference. That's the bar a West Virginian is expecting. If you're a mountaineer from West Virginia, you are expecting that same bar because that your senator brought that over and over and over again. Let's not forget who the other senator from West Virginia was for bunches of years, Jay Rockefeller of the Rockefellers. So they've had some star status. They've had some star status representing them in the Senate. Joe Manchin was their governor, pretty young guy, and he's had big shoes to fill, and Chuck Schumer's not letting him try to fill any of them. All Chuck Schumer's allowing him to do is say no. Well, Robert C. Byrd and Senator Rockefeller didn't say no. They said yes, and they brought stuff home. So he needs to do that. And I think last night, him standing up after he figured out, well, if nobody else is going to stand up, I better sure start. So he did. He started a few times. But maybe he was by himself. They didn't pan the whole Democratic Party, but for the most part, he looked like he was by himself, at least in the section where he was sitting, which was mostly Democrats. He was by himself. That I do know.
Yeah.
I think he's going to be a real power broker for a few Democrats. When it comes to the infrastructure bill, another one that is in his camp like that is Joe Donnelly of Indiana, Heidi Heitkamp. I mean, I can name six or eight that he's carrying around now with him. So this will be interesting to see how this plays out, because going back to the State of the Union, the president basically said, hey, guys, I'll give you what you need for DACA.
Yeah.
I'll give you, you know, the ending of chain migration. Let's not forget, we can remember back in the day, 4 or 5 years ago, we railed against the Rubio Gang of Eight bill because it had so many things in it. It ended chain migration. It passed the Senate with Democrat support. So they used to like the provision. They used to like to end the provision that ended the lottery. But they've so adopted all the immigration stances as far as being protective of illegal immigrants, they turned themselves on their own heads.
So I
applaud the president. He stands up and says, you know what, I'll give that to you. I'll give that to you. Let's work together. Let's do this for America. Let's straighten out our immigration system and get back on track. And they sit on their hands. It was a little astounding.
Well, it is, but it isn't when you consider that what he's done is he's taken away their issue from them. They don't have an issue now.
No, I get that. Correct. Exactly. But they also don't have anything to be for. And we've learned this in the last 6, 8 years. It's really, really tough to win elections if you're always against something and you're not for anything. We were against Barack Obama. We were against every policy that just about he put out. We were against the direction that he was taking America. We were for the traditional American system. We weren't just against something. We had something to be for. We were we had something that we applauded in addition to being against something. We wanted government out of our way. So it's very difficult to run an election and being just against everything. It just is very, very hard. It's negative, first of all. it's distasteful after a while because you don't feel good coming out of a rally. You just feel mad and disgruntled, and because all you're talking about is being mad and angry and against things.
We
much more enjoy, I'm talking about just humans in general, we much more enjoy being at a pep rally, being for something. Let's try to win one for the Gipper kind of thing.
Sure.
We leave happy, floating on air, you know, eager to go win one. It's a lot harder to keep people up. And they typically, Andrea, they don't go to the polls in the same numbers if they're just against something. They need something to be for also. They need something to support. And Joe Manson's not a dumb man. He's smart. Now, the one that's really got himself in a box is Senator Schumer, the minority leader. He's got himself in a box I don't know how he gets out of. And our president has put him there in a beautiful way. It's sort of amazing.
He did not look happy last night.
Oh, good God, no, he sure didn't. And you know who looked almost as unhappy as him was Nancy Pelosi. She looked sour.
Sour. What was she doing with her mouth? What was that thing with her mouth? I mean, I noticed she does it all the time. I don't know.
You know, I don't know. I'm going to say something really catty. Are her dentures bothering her? I don't know. I don't know.
It looks like
something. Something's amiss in her mouth.
But
you know, that's the Democrats' answer to their leadership. Nancy Pelosi from the West Coast and Chuck Schumer from the East Coast. You got New York and California. Well, you know what? The majority of us don't live in New York and California. We live in between those two. And they don't represent us well. So, you know, the Democratic Party's got a million problems. They've got so many problems. It's just that's just the start of them. But that's a big part of them because they pull the party in those two directions. That's where they pull them. They pull them in those liberal directions, the East Coast New York direction and the West Coast liberal direction, because the money flows from there. Both of those men and women are popular. They keep their leadership posts. They're able to whip their members in line because they can throw the money around.
Do you think that that's going to have as much impact this cycle with Nancy Pelosi and Schumer in terms of retaining the leadership positions?
A newer member of Congress is not going to believe that money is all that in a bag of chips like some of the older guys do. The newer ones are realizing, I can do a lot on free internet. I can do a lot with Google ads. I can do a lot with boosting my Facebook page. I'm being a little too simplistic, but I'm trying to make the point. You can't win a statewide election that way. But you can spend a lot less money if you really massage all of those well. We know that. Donald Trump did that. He didn't set up these huge, huge, big firms in the big states like Florida and California and Texas and hire the big gun law firms that are, you know, $500 a minute and do all of that. He hired some of those, but he didn't do the big stuff that the big campaigns have traditionally done, from Hillary Clinton to Barack Obama, hire everybody that's hireable in the states and rent all the storefronts in the major cities and fill them with people, burn the midnight oil. And he didn't do that, and look what it got him. Got him president of the United States. So he's sort of rewriting campaigning. So Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer are going to slowly not going to have the same effect that they would if the system were the old system. Now, I don't know if a lot of these members of Congress know how to run in that type of system. You do run differently. You run with taglines. You run with more
hashtags.
Social media advertising. Hashtags.
Yeah.
Yep, that's the
hashtags.
One. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Just to give you an example, just to illustrate what you're saying, I was on my iPhone today and I was starting to watch a video. No, it was a Drudge Report, and I clicked on a story to read, and what came up before the story was an ad, and the ad was against Ron DeSantis, who has announced this past week that he's going to run for Florida governorship. and the ad is already there. It's already been done. They are picturing him as a member of the Washington swamp, that he voted to cut Medicare for Florida's senior citizens and blah, blah, blah. It's already happening, and it's happening on social media.
Exactly.
I didn't even have to go and look for it. It popped up on my screen. So, yeah, social media is, I mean, it's very, very powerful. And, you know, earlier today I was telling the listeners before you joined us, I was listening to Lionel Nation, who is an attorney by profession and a radio show host. I don't know if he does terrestrial radio anymore or what, but he does a podcast every day at noon, just right at the same time that Rush is coming on. But the beauty of a podcast is, of course, you can listen to it whenever you want. And he was making the point today that the whole industry, the whole way we get our information is rapidly changing. And that he was talking about, using the State of the Union address last night as an example. The people who love Trump, they go to Fox News because Fox News is having orgasms over the State of the Union address. He knocked it out of the park. He was wonderful. He was blah, 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 blah. And the people mm-hmm. that hate Trump, they go to CNN or MSNBC because that's where they go to get their feelings validated, their feelings assuaged, just like the folks who love Trump go to Fox, okay? So he says, mm-hmm. but those are people who are paying attention and are very involved in politics. They like to know what's going on. But you look at America, and it's a bell curve. And he says, and in that bell, the bulge of the bell, he said, that's the rest of America. And they're busy. They don't know. They don't care. They're low information. They catch it when they catch it, and that's it. He said, but what's happening is what Trump did last night, the way he positioned the policy issues, he said, those people that aren't paying that much attention, those are the ones you want to go after. And, of course, you've said that yourself. But what they did last night was they said, huh. That, mm-hmm. And he said, that's what you want. You want them to be lifting up their heads and going, huh.
Wow.
Paying attention
that was
now.
Cool.
Yeah.
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 I heard that.
Because,
that was kind of cool. Huh.
It really is. And now you've got – and that was one of the points that he was making. And the other point that he was making also was that social media run an election on social media. And that Fox, the narrow casting of Fox's programming and CNN's programming and all of the commercials that they have to put in, and they've got to get all these guests on and makeup and lights and all of this stuff. He says, I'm sitting here with a computer at my kitchen table. He said, I don't need mm-hmm. anything. He said, a telephone, that's it. That's all I need. He said, it is changing. We have different platforms now. And I'm wondering how this is going to impact this cycle. We saw how it impacted the presidential cycle. This cycle coming up and subsequent cycles in the future, how it's going to be the internet savvy politicians who I think are going to be more successful. And or the internet, the politicians who hire internet people who understand how to make this happen. The Dan Scavinos, like who Trump mm-hmm. has doing all his social media.
Well, let's remember who rose to fame as a brand new freshman senator and came close to being a Republican nominee for the president last time around. That's Ted Cruz, and he did it through social media. He did it through likes on his Facebook page. He mm-hmm. did it. That's how we learned about him. Otherwise, he was just a freshman senator from Texas. There wasn't anything super, super special about him initially.
Mm.
I mm-hmm. firmly believe that. Some of his old team have put together a what's becoming a up-and-coming huge digital campaign media team called Axiom, and they've just bought another media team called the Partners Group or something like that. I'm not sure which.
Mm-hmm.
Together, they have elected something like 70 to 80 House members and senators just in the last 4 years by social media, by clicks,
wow.
by likes, by
yep.
It is
wow.
They
it's
work
happening.
For Mike Pence as governor.
Hmm.
So
hmm.
The White House knows this. The White House has figured
mm-hmm.
it out. There's a lot
mm-hmm.
of members of Congress that haven't. And that brings us back to where we started out. Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer's street cred with other members of their party is going to lose a little bit of its power, because money, while it's all powerful, it does a lot in politics, it doesn't make or break you anymore.
Mm-mm.
It just
and
doesn't.
Trump proved that. Trump proved that.
Right.
He spent what, a third of what the others did,
spent.
Especially
yep.
Hillary. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh.
So
we'll watch.
You know, he again. They still wield their power because the Washington power brokers believe that money is everything, and so
mm-hmm.
many of the members of Congress hire the Washington power brokers as their campaign people. But if
mm-hmm.
they would seriously start looking at some of these computer whiz kids,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
obviously it's working.
Well, I got to tell you, a little anecdotal to illustrate, again, underscore what you're saying. My son called me earlier to wish me happy birthday, and he's into politics. He likes politics, too. It must be hereditary. And he said to me that he said, you've got to start listening to Dan Bongino. And I started laughing. I said, well, I have been. And I said, I didn't know you were listening to him. He goes, oh, he's great. He's great. I listen to his podcast. He explains everything. I mean, he's getting his information on,
mm-hmm.
while he's on the job. He's got the type of job where he can plug in and listen, and that's what he's doing. He's getting his information on podcast. He listens
mm-hmm.
to Mark Levin, too, but he loves Bongino. I mean, he's just all over it. And Bongino's numbers are skyrocketing because he's on right now with Hannity. He gets a lot of exposure, so that doesn't hurt him. But he's credible. He's knowledgeable. He's got inside information, insider people telling him what's going on. And so he's giving out valuable information in a way that people, even like my son said, it's great for beginners who don't know what's happening, because he explains it in a way that you do. And if you don't
right.
get it when you listen to it the first go around, you just hit replay and listen to it again.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So
yep.
it's social media.
Yep.
Yeah.
Right, right. And there, you're right. There needs to be all levels of that. You and I have talked about sort of the three or four talk show guys that are it's slightly different now than when we were talking about them, and how one of them specifically was sort of in that lane of he takes care of the newbies. The new people that are trying to learn, he doesn't talk over their head. He doesn't disparage
right.
them if they don't know something or
right,
or,
right.
know, sort of make them feel stupid if they happen to call in. His show
mm-hmm.
is for the newbies. Then
mm-hmm.
we sort of could buttonhole the one we thought was for the middle of the road learners that have caught
right.
on, but they don't know all the nuances. And of course, we put Rush as the one that, if you're a real political hack, you listen to him. You want to know,
yeah.
and he knows all
yeah.
the inside. So I think that's true, and
mm-hmm.
I think that
mm-hmm.
feeds our hunger for it.
It provides us with an array of people who can provide us with information that we are hungry for. And
mm-hmm.
you know, I mean, everybody has their own, you know, choice. But anyway, I want to kind of slide off of that and move on to Trey Gowdy announcing today
yeah.
that he's not going to run again. He's getting out. Were you disappointed to hear that?
Yeah, that'll be a loss. That will be a loss. But, you know, it'll be a gain for South Carolina. Who knows? We may see him federally. He may be
mm-hmm.
getting himself geared up to take over for Jeff Sessions if he leaves in a year or so. Or he may run for governor. He said he misses the courtroom. And
yeah.
he's a pretty good litigator. I mean, we've seen him. He is pretty
mm-hmm.
good. He's been chairman of a couple of the big committees that have had, of course, the Benghazi committee he was chairman of. He's been chairman of oversight. We've seen him throw some zingers out, and he really knows how to put a witness through the ringer. And he said he
mm-hmm.
really misses the law. I
mm-hmm.
could see him doing. I could see him doing the attorney general role in South Carolina. I could see him being our national attorney general. I could see him being governor. I don't know what he's going to end up doing. You know,
mm-hmm.
he made it sound like he's going to go open up a small law practice in South Carolina. I think he's going to want to go a little bigger than that.
Yeah.
You know,
I don't think he's going to be wanting
writing wills and divorce
no.
title. I mean, you know, that kind of thing.
No.
But,
well, he was one of the top federal prosecutors Right. I see him wanting to stay closer to home, and if he does get back into politics, it'll be on a state somewhere in the state. I kind of have a funny feeling that he's not going to want to go back to Washington, even if it is AG. I don't know. I think he's just fed up with it. And I'll tell you something else, too. The people that I'm watching, that I'm reading, who are on the inside, the Thomas Paines, et cetera, have been scratching their head over Trey Gowdy's seeming flip-flops for the past 6 months. Thomas Paine said just yesterday, I wish he would make up his mind. He's no longer a member of the FBI judicial system, law enforcement community. He's not in that club anymore, but he keeps trying to defend it. He's a member of Congress. He's wearing a different hat. And so he needs to make a choice one way or the other. And the expression that they used was, you know, blank or get off the pot. Well, evidently their instincts, their intuition was right, because this very day, Trey Gowdy announces he's not running anymore. He wants to get back into the
courtroom. That tells that's even more of a tip to me that he may want to be get AG, because the AG has to, those agencies are under the Attorney General. The Attorney General has to be the cheerleader for them. He can clean house a little bit, but he has to be the cheerleader. He has to believe in them. Deeply, and Trey Gowdy does.
Yeah.
So I guess obviously we'll see.
Yeah. So anyway, maybe that's just a step that he's taking to kind of cleanse the palate before something like that comes down the pike. Maybe he knows something
right.
that we don't. But in the meantime,
you know, and if you come to Congress with a real passion for an issue or a couple of issues or a venue. And you get there and you find the frustration of, geez, you can't hardly get anything done. And you can't work across the aisle. You just can't get hardly anything done. If you're a doer, it's very frustrating. And I think you and I talked offline how many members of Congress have left Congress and gone to be a governor. And some would say that's a lateral move. I see it as not a lateral move, but I see it as almost a slight step backwards. I was talking to Governor Brownback a couple of weeks ago. He was at the Dole thing. And he said that's being governor of Kansas is the toughest job he has ever had.
Really?
Yep, because it's a mini version of being president. Think about it. You're the governor of the state. You've got to work with your state house, your state senate. I think we have all but two states in our nation that have a bicameral state legislature, whether it's called the House of Delegates or whatever. They've got a house and a senate, and then of course they've got the governor. And he just said that he's had so many issues. A big part of it is though what the federal government does to the state governor, all the mandates they give them, all the bills that they. When we say that the federal government, the Senate, we talk about a Senate bill made it to the president or a House bill finally made it over there, and it's going to tell the states how to do blah, blah, blah. First of all, it generally gives them a blueprint on how to do it. They have to develop how to do it, and 99% of the time, they have to pay the bill for it. So when they think it's – here's a good one. I love the idea that everybody on food stamps needs to be drug tested. Who's going to pay for that? When you go to get your welfare check, obviously it's an EBT card now, but you know what I mean. You go to the agency in Tallahassee and Jacksonville. I'm thinking of our state. You know, every major city, and you go sign up. Who's going to pay for it? Who's going to pay for the employees? What test are you going to buy? Who's going to administer it? Blah, blah. Do you see what I'm saying? All of the things that we love that the federal government does, it taxes, and I don't mean literally, but it puts a burden on the state to fulfill that role. And it's tough if you're working in a state that's lean right now or that's got its own problems. Add that on top of it. It's almost like the federal government just keeps pounding and pounding away at them to do more and more and more. And a lot of the states are struggling just to keep their head above water. So I say that to say senators and House members, even though it's a tough, tough job, they leave the Senate and the House because they feel like they might be able to get a little bit more done as a governor.
Mm-hmm. I have to kind of interrupt you here for a minute because I have the TV on and it's on mute, and they were just showing a clip of Joe Manchin on CNN today calling out his fellow Democrats for being disrespectful.
Mm-hmm.
So he's on
he's
TV. He's on
himself.
And he's on the he's in the enemy camp. Saying,
right.
calling out his fellow Democrats. That's pretty significant, I think. I think that's yep. pretty ballsy. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
He's,
anyway.
He's positioning himself to take a step back from the
mm-hmm.
camp of no. Nancy Pelosi, mm-hmm. I want you to vote no. Chuck Schumer, I want you to vote no. He needs to start before things, as we talked about.
Mm-hmm. So, okay, that kind of segues into the retreat that members of Congress were on their way to this morning when their train evidently, either the train hit a truck and killed the driver. That must have been horrible for them.
I'll tell you a story of my own personal situation like that, being in China on a bus going to the Great Wall. There were two buses. The senators were in a bus in front of us. We were in the bus directly behind them with some of the staff from the guest house, the Diutao guest house that housed our delegation. It's the guest house that was built for when Nixon went over to visit the people of China. If you remember,
mm-hmm.
he was the one that brokered the first talks with China.
Yeah.
We were the next delegation that came, the next big one. So it was a lot of the staff from the Diutao guest house, and they were going to feed us lunch at the Great Wall and have us tour the place and all of that. Our bus got in a horrific accident with another bus, and it caused that bus to have all of those people get thrown around in glass and cut to pieces, and it just was a horrible, horrible situation. And we, like the train that was carrying some members of Congress going to West Virginia, we had the Codell doctor and nurse on our bus.
Mm-hmm.
So we demand that we stop, even though we didn't have to stop. We could have kept going and administered to those, and several of the Chinese people died. This
was
a very similar situation. They had chartered an Amtrak train, and it was House members, and it hit. I don't know how it hit. Obviously, the truck had to be on the track.
The truck was the train was traveling at 70 miles an hour. Yeah, and the truck was on the tracks, and the train just sliced right into it where the driver's cab is, according to what I saw. And people are wondering
something that looked like what was the truck doing?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And now, kind of tying this in with what I'm reading on social media, people are hearkening back to what what Q has dropped, and with regard to this whole memo situation, has warned that there could be a false flag event that they will try to divert and attention away from this, and maybe buy them some time to make this whole memo thing go away. Or at least figure out what they want, what they can do to ameliorate the situation, that they would create a false flag situation. A lot of people believe that what happened in Las Vegas with the shooting at the Mandalay Bay Hotel, that was a false
mm-hmm.
flag event. They're thinking that, this is how people are thinking these days. Even, I'm not talking about tinfoil hat people. I'm talking about serious people who are looking at this stuff now because they don't trust at all. And they're saying, could this have been a deliberate attempt to create a false flag event in which some members of Congress could have gotten killed? Because the CIA has, and I don't mean to belabor this, but the CIA has ways to control the mechanisms of vehicles now because they're all electronic, they're computer. And that's how
mm-hmm.
it's believed that Michael Hastings was killed. But I'm kind of going off on a different direction. But
and
it must just
have been
seems an
error, though, because these were Republican House members, and nobody on the train, other than a few people, got banged around who were standing up and walking around.
Right.
Either it didn't work, or
mm-hmm.
that doesn't play out well because it
right
would be,
right.
I would think you would think it would be the Democrats that were
would be trying to cast themselves as heroes and saviors in a situation like this, and it wasn't. It was the Republicans.
Yeah, but they weren't. I think you're kind of missing the point. The point is that an incident was, if it was a false flag event, the incident was promulgated by members of the intelligence community to create a situation that would have been so horrific, especially if members of Congress had, or their family members or their staff had been killed in this incident, that then it would have been, that would have taken over the news cycle. That would have been the big news.
I see. Yes.
You know?
Okay. I see. Yes. Okay. Well, so, I guess, you know, you're right. People start thinking this way because they're afraid of the memo. They're afraid of what it is, what's in it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have the FBI, I read a statement by somebody in the FBI saying that they didn't have enough time to vet the memo, and you be careful what you're reading when you're reading it, and it really shouldn't be out, and this could be damaging to our country.
Mm-hmm.
I've also heard and remember multiple times when these documents are being asked to be released, they make a huge, huge ordeal right before they're released. As, you know, it'll be a national security incident, and this should never be released. And then a month later, we barely even remember what was in it. The last one was the 911 commission report. Remember, they wanted to redact 28 pages, or I can't remember how many pages now, but that's in my head.
There were 28 pages that were never released, that have been classified, that are not being released, and people believe that it has to do with the Saudi Arabians that were in this country. That George
Correct.
Bush,
but,
yeah, yeah. And we still
yeah,
don't know
yeah,
what's in those 28 pages.
Right, but they, before the thing was released, they were making a big deal about even releasing what they did release, that it just caused just awful chaos and blah, 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 and basically that they ended up agreeing to all of that but those 28 pages, and we barely remember what the rest of the report even says.
Mm-hmm. Well, and now, in hindsight, we realize that a lot of that report was just bunk, because a lot of people were being protected. Just like the Warren Commission report on the JFK assassination, bunk.
Right, but the world didn't. Chicken Little, the sky did not fall after that thing was released. I guess that's the point I'm trying to make. And they're making the same point with this. That my gosh, this is just going to be the end of our national security as we know it if this thing comes out.
Yeah. And evidently, according to Bloomberg, they're reporting that it's FBI Director Christopher Wray, who's now saying he's told the White House he opposes the release of this, where he evidently had earlier gone, when he had read the memo, he was okay with letting it go. But now he's had a change of heart, and Rod Rosenstein, the Deputy Attorney General, also is saying, please don't release it. You know, this is, we have grave concerns over the accuracy of it. I think Trump knows what's in it, and I think that John Kelly knows what's in it. I think that the appropriate people know what's in it, and they're going to release it regardless. And why Christopher Wray of the FBI is making this last-minute protestation is very suspect. A lot of people are questioning that. It's like, whose side is he on here? Is he going after the truth?
Right. Right, exactly. It is the timing especially is suspect, because if I remember correctly, after the House voted, they sent all of the documents to the FBI, and they've had them, and he didn't come across as a big red flag 2 days ago, 3 days ago, 4 days ago, 5 days ago.
Right.
Why now?
Right.
Get to a page that was inflammatory? I'm being a little funny. It's only four pages.
He went to the SCIF, at the White House on Sunday afternoon. That's when Wray first saw the memo on Sunday. He went with Rod Rosenstein. The two of them went together, and he saw it on Sunday. And for some reason now, on Tuesday, because today's Wednesday, but on Tuesday he comes out and says, "Well, we don't think this is a good idea." First of all, he said he wanted to have his own legal people look at it, which was fine. Everybody was, you know, yeah, of course, you'd want to. And now he's saying he has some problems with it. So I don't know. I mean, I just, the whole thing stinks. It just stinks. You know, I mean, it's so suspect, and it is casting aspersions on the FBI and the DOJ. I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see where. And if it is not released, despite what the president said last night to one of the members of the House as he was walking out of the House chamber, somebody said, "Mr. President, will you please release the memo?" And will you release the memo? And he said, 100%, 100%. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. I mean, people are taking that, yeah, we're going to release it. Mm-hmm. And I think it's released, it's going to be hell to pay, because there are going to be a lot of members of Congress who are going to be implicated in this too. This is just, as many, many people have been saying, this is just the very tip of the iceberg. This is going to unwind the Iran spy ring in Congress, the Uranium One deal. I mean, this is so far reaching. It's all connected.
I believe that, because the members of Congress that are saying it are not the typical ones that are inflammatory and the ones that want to get on Fox News right away. And I mean, they're just not. They're usually the low key, I call them the worker bees behind the scenes, don't want the FaceTime in the media as much. And there's nothing wrong with the FaceTime either. I'm not saying that, but there's some personalities that are better at it than others.
These are the
worker bees that really are behind the scenes sort of writing the legislation and combing over it. And they're the ones saying, wow, this is explosive.
And that the American people deserve to know about this. And again, hearkening back to the crumbs or the clues that Q has dropped, and Q, of course, being believed to be somebody in military intelligence who is close to the president and knows how to play this game, if you will, which is typical military code. He essentially is saying that when it all comes out, it won't all come out, because we will only know 40% of what is really going on, because otherwise it would destroy our trust in government. It would be devastating for humanity's sake. For humanity, you will only know 40%. And I think that a lot of people who've been doing the digging about this whole Pizzagate thing and the child molestation and the satanic rituals and the Podesta brothers' involvement in it, Hillary's involvement, Huma's involvement, I think that is so dark. It is so awful to contemplate. It is the pit of evil that these people have been involved with. That, and who was it that was saying? I think it was Dr. Corsi, when he was on a YouTube. They were deciphering the last batch that Q had posted, and Corsi, in the process of deciphering it, said what Q is saying here is that there are things that have been going on by people in our government that are so disturbing, you don't want to know. Trust me when I say you don't want to know. He said, I know I can handle it, he said, because I've been involved in investigations, and I know what people are capable of. I know that these things happen. He said, but the average American, you won't be able to sleep. You'll have bad dreams. Mm-hmm. This will just knock your pins right out from underneath you. And I think I know what he's talking about, because I've been exploring this through George Webb for months and months and months. This is how he started his investigation, talking about what the Clintons and the cabal did in Haiti. Horrible things, horrible. And in Kosovo and in Syria and Libya. I mean, these people are monsters. They're monsters. They might look good. They might come across as, you know, looking like you and me. My Siri listens to me. This is kind of weird. It's kind of scary. Do you know Rush Limbaugh's did that to him the other day too? He was talking and his Siri went off, and he said it does that every now and then. And I thought, oh my God, mine does that all the time when I'm doing my show. It thinks I'm asking it a question.
Are you pushing the center button?
No. It's the phone. I'm not even touching it. It's sitting beside me. It's plugged in. I'm charging it.
Interesting.
But it does that. It just, yeah. It's kind of weird. Anyway. Okay, so I've got a checklist here. We talked about Trey. We talked about the State of the Union address. Oh, I wanted to mention also, you mentioned Sam Brownback, mayor, governor of Kansas.
Governor.
He's mm-hmm. just been appointed by Trump to be the United States ambassador at large for international religious freedom. Did you have that discussion with him when you saw him? Did he know
that this
was coming?
No. Okay. He knew that. We talked about some of the stuff he was tackling in Kansas, and then we talked about Dole Days and stuff like that.
Oh, okay. So he didn't indicate at that time that he was up. Well, he probably wouldn't if it hadn't happened yet. He'd probably keep to his own counsel at that point.
No, he'd already gone through almost the whole confirmation process. He was about to be confirmed. It was almost a fait accompli.
Yeah, it was
almost a fait. He just wanted to tell me what it was like to be a governor, and it was miserable. I mean, that's sort of I shouldn't say miserable, mm-hmm. but he was talking about it was a tough job.
I want to talk with you some about polling. There are a lot of polls coming out, especially after the State of the Union, how Trump did, 43% of the Democrats thought he did a great job. And in fact, Rush opened his show today talking about it, saying the only number you need to know is 43%. And that is mm-hmm. making the Democrats very, very nervous.
Crazy.
He did
crazy.
Crazy. Yeah, I guess crazy. But how much credence do you put in the polling that we see coming out here?
It depends. Yes, I do. It depends on what poll. I think you and I talked offline a little bit about some of the Lou Harris. Let's just start there. Lou Harris, who used mm-hmm. to be a pollster, he was sort of the beginning of the pollster world. He did polls for John F. Kennedy. Sort of back in the day when people weren't even familiar with polls that much. He's probably the inventor of polls in some Wikipedia type page. He's not, but you know what I mean. People mm-hmm. think of him. He passed away, by the way. But was sort of the beginning pollster, and they created the Harris poll. He created the Harris poll, which has always had some validity to it. Well, I can tell you now that Mark Penn owns the Harvard Harris polling system. Mark Penn's cut his teeth on doing polling for Clinton, and I think most of the listeners will remember Clinton did a lot of his governing via polls. It was very frustrating to members of Congress because if what you were asking didn't fit in his poll, it's almost like he didn't want to listen to you. So you'd come back from a White House meeting and say, damn, I should have twisted it in one of his damn polls that he listens to all the time. They were just, I guess, surprised that a president put that much credence in polls. So mm-hmm. I say that to say that Mark Penn had some street cred even back then. He's a very good pollster, and that means the data that he uses, the means that he uses, is very good. He nails it pretty much when it comes to the median American feeling. He can get it. And I have been told that the Chuck Schumer policy of saying no to Donald Trump and trying to make him into the crazy orange hair guy, and he
mm-hmm.
can't be trusted, and you know, it's like negotiating with Jell-O. He said that last week, and sort of the same MO that Nancy Pelosi has been using. If the Democratic Party started losing some of that middle of the road base, or if Trump started eating into the independents, they were going to be told they have to change gears. I think the poll from last night is going to make them change gears. So that's a long way of saying that poll is going to end up being very important. And I think the combination of that poll and Joe Manchin and his new stardom, his new claim mm-hmm. to fame with this coalition, this common sense coalition, and as you said, as you talked in the middle of the show, he's on TV saying, my fellow Democrats have got it wrong. They're not mm-hmm. doing this right. I need mm-hmm. to say adios to this kind of behavior. I'm going to be different. He's making the move that Chuck Schumer needs to move,
mm-hmm.
needs to make. And I'm guessing Schumer's going to eventually make it. But the likes of Joe Manchin and some of these other Democrats, remember there's 25 Senate Democrats up for re-election.
Yeah.
10 of them
yes.
are in red states. They got 7 months to convince people they're not just the people that say no in a red state, and they want to be reelected to come back to Washington and to act to be blue, to do nothing. They've
yeah.
got to convince their electorate to do otherwise, to think
yes.
otherwise of them. So
mm-hmm.
they're going to have to pivot.
Mm-hmm.
I think this poll is going to make Chuck Schumer pivot. And what does that mean? That means that I think you'll see an infrastructure bill this year, and I think you'll see an immigration bill this year, which in any other mid-year election cycle, I would have said you'd see nothing, because that is typical. The first year you see the biggest bill, the second year you see nothing, because they're gearing up for that midterm election. Every
mm-hmm.
president going back to 1934, who has run two terms, the midterm election of his first term takes a bath. His party takes a bath. Andrea, they lose an average of 26 seats in the House of Representatives. Every single president except for two. Except
and that
two.
Would have
George
been...
W. is one of them. Roosevelt. And George W.
Yeah.
Bush.
Yeah, yeah.
And the way I kind of read that, neither one of them lost. Their party did not lose in the midterm election. They gained.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Roosevelt's was the result of the New Deal. We were
mm-hmm.
just getting out of a depression, or we were trying
mm-hmm.
to come out of a depression. And
mm-hmm.
he promised and did an awful lot in his first year. Amazingly
mm-hmm.
a lot. Most, an awful lot of the New Deal. Now, you can agree with the programs or not. I'm just telling you factually, most of the New Deal was introduced and parachuted on the American people within the first year of his presidency. You can say it didn't
yep.
really work. It was the beginning of all these social programs, and I would agree with all of that. But back in the day, if you're drowning in the Depression and he's
right.
throwing policies and new programs
right.
at you, and it's getting
right.
your head above water temporarily.
Yeah.
You're
yeah.
thinking that's
you're
a good thing.
Yeah. Well, that's
you're
from the
thinking
Works
that's
Project,
a good thing.
Right? The
yes.
Public Works Project was begun.
Oh,
and
yep.
And that built a lot of our infrastructure. So, I mean,
correct.
I can see the similarities between what FDR did and what Trump is trying to do. The only difference being is that FDR went outside of the Constitution and threatened the Supreme Court when they balked at it, saying, okay, you can balk at it if you want, but I have the power to add more Supreme Court justices,
right.
And I will. I'll pack
right.
the court.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Right. But that's what he did to the American people, bringing them what they were hoping was a life preserver out of the Depression. So his midterm elections, he actually gained seats. George
mm-hmm.
W.'s midterm elections, he gained seats, but what happened in the first term, the first year of George W. Bush's presidency?
And we were attacked. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he made us believe for the next year that he was going to keep us safe.
Yeah.
So those two are different. But
yeah.
I think they do mirror what Donald Trump is doing. He's
mm-hmm.
bringing, he's making America great again. He's reversing the Obama administration socialist direction that many of American people thought we were going. Blood,
yes.
We were going there. We were almost
yep.
there. He's
yes.
reversing that. He's putting the brakes mm-hmm. on. We're smelling the brake pads just burning on the asphalt. We're stopping so drastically and turning
mm-hmm.
around. So
mm-hmm.
I believe that it won't be the bloodbath that is typical. But Chuck Schumer still believes that he can make all of these inroads. That's why they're doing what they are doing.
Yeah.
I think the poll from last night, I think Joe Manchin telling people, and I think Joe Manchin's coalition is going to pull the rug right out from under Chuck Schumer, whether he likes it or not. He's going to
uh-huh.
have to reverse course.
Wow.
He's going to have to change his course.
Yeah. Well, and the polling is showing also that all of Trump's issues are largely supported by the American people. The issue of immigration, huge support.
Mm-hmm.
The issue on infrastructure, the economy. I mean, he's got the wind at his back, is how I'm seeing it.
Exactly.
Now, what about the House? What about Nancy Pelosi? I mean, I know you talk to the Senate because that's what you're most familiar with, but give us a sense of what you think is going. What's Nancy going to do? Is she going to have to pivot, or is she out?
She's out almost. And when I say that, they don't have to pivot. They can stay voting no if they need to, because the House is a different creature. The House is run by the Speaker. The Speaker calls the votes. The speaker schedules the bills, and it's a simple majority vote, and they have the majority. So they don't need a single Democrat. They don't need a single Democrat to get things through the House. And mm-hmm. Democrats in the House can say, well, I would have voted for it. I knew it was going to make it through anyway because there was enough Republicans, so it would have made it over to the Senate. But I would have voted for it if this paragraph were slightly different or that paragraph was slightly different. But see, they're not responsible for killing it. The difference is then that bill gets to the Senate, and Chuck Schumer and his gang of Democrats are responsible for killing the bill. They've killed
mm-hmm.
all of these bills.
Yeah.
I don't believe
yeah.
they're going to be able to continue to kill them. The only reason they didn't kill the tax bill, and your listeners are smart, they know this, is because Senator McConnell used the reconciliation process, which only needed a majority vote to pass.
Mm-hmm.
But the immigration bill, it's going to need some Democrat support.
Mm-hmm.
Because right now the Senate majority of Republicans is really at the number 5-0. McCain is not coming back, or I shouldn't say, I don't know that for a fact, but he's certainly not back. So
it's not likely.
They are at 50. They need 10 Democrats to get them to that 60 threshold to get cloture to invoke so they can break a filibuster.
Yeah.
Joe Manchin has to bring 9 colleagues with him and say,
yep.
okay, Mitch, I'm here
yeah.
to negotiate. This is what we want. You want 9 of us? You want 10 of us? This is what we want.
You know, watching Mitch McConnell's face last night at the State of the Union, I had the instant sense that McConnell was watching and listening to what Trump was saying and thinking to himself, oh, my God, have I got a battle ahead of me. He is just loading me. I am, oh, my God. I'm going to –
Yep.
I got my work cut out
yep.
for me.
Yeah.
So
that's
I was
exactly
reading
what he
that
was thinking.
Pretty right.
mm-hmm. That's exactly what he was thinking. Yeah, you're putting way too much on my plate, because it's all going to
mm-hmm.
end up on Mitch McConnell's plate, because
yeah.
the House of Representatives could call up every one of these bills one day a week and in 10 weeks have all of them done. But they go to the Senate, and we know what happens. Chuck Schumer
yep.
says, nope, you're not getting 10
yep.
of my guys. Nope,
yep.
we're not going to vote to proceed. Nope, you're not going to ever get it out of the starting gate until and unless you have this common sense coalition headed by Joe Manchin says to Schumer, sorry, Chuck, we're going over to talk to Mitch. I got 10 of my guys, and
mm-hmm.
we need some stuff. And
it's
going to be typically those 10 Senate Democrats from those 10 red states that want to come back after November. They want to keep their job. They want to
yeah.
be reelected. The magic number is 10. There are 10
yeah.
Senate Democrats from reds that are sweating BBs. There's 25 up, but there are 10 that are especially nervous.
Uh-huh.
The other
uh-huh.
15 are not exactly calm, but
right.
those 10 nervous, nervous,
yeah.
nervous.
Yeah. And do you think that that's going to prompt them to vote for the budget? I mean, we've got the budget coming up now. What? This CR
February
expires
8th.
On February. That's
yes.
what I thought. So what do you anticipate is going to happen with that? Oh, God.
They'll get another – they might need another week extension, but they'll get it all the way through the end of the year. And it'll have some – and the Republicans basically will be okay with the spending levels. There won't be wall money because the president will say, I'm putting wall money in DACA. I'm trading DACA for wall money. So let's just take that out. They'll trim away a little bit at Planned Parenthood. Won't be enough for the real fiscal Republicans. But they'll get it through. And the next big push will be the debt limit. The debt limit expires in March.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to have to do the appropriations process to fund the federal government in February. In March, you'll have to do the debt limit. And by April, you'll be dealing with the immigration bill. And before June, you'll have the infrastructure bill done. And then I think you don't do anything until the election. You pretty much only have to do what you have to do.
So the budget then is going to be another continuing resolution that'll take us out to the end of the year?
End of the fiscal year, which would be the end of September, yes.
Okay, so it's another continuing resolution. So when do we actually get down into the nitty-gritty of doing a real budget instead of just rolling the can, kicking the can down the road?
Well, I can tell you that Speaker Ryan and the House of Representatives did all 12 of the appropriations bills this last go-around, and
mm-hmm.
Schumer stopped them all.
Mm-hmm.
Schumer stopped every single one. Said he wasn't going to vote for him. So if this new wave of Democrats does exist
mm-hmm.
in the way that I'm thinking it might for those two bills, you might start getting them for appropriations bills, especially the ones like Homeland Security. If we really
mm-hmm.
think we're under some kind of attack or imminent attack, which apparently Homeland Security thinks that every day, and I'm sure it's true on a certain
yeah.
level, you might
yeah.
get somebody like Manchin to bring this coalition over and say, Chuck, I've got to vote for this bill. I don't want them to keep operating under continuing resolutions. And if you notice, agency heads, these are cabinet secretaries, are starting to echo that. They're starting to say,
uh-huh.
I can't keep operating on this shoestring budget. I have
yeah.
it, I don't have it. I've got my money, I don't have my money. I've got my money
yeah.
for 30. I can't contract with something. Nobody's going to contract with a federal government if they don't even know if they're going to have the money after 30 days. It just doesn't work that way.
So they're going to be
putting... becoming very cumbersome.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. And do the agency heads typically put pressure on the leadership in Congress?
Oh, absolutely, yes. The cabinet
uh-huh.
secretaries, they call all the time and say, I can't run my Department of Defense.
Yeah.
If you're going to tell me I'm going to get a chunk of money to run it
yeah.
for 13 days,
yeah.
25 days, 2 weeks here, 3 months there, give me the whole year. You know, they have been, an awful lot of these agencies, the bigger ones that deal with our security, for example, have been talking and trying to talk the leadership into going into a five-year budget, two-year budget cycles, anything but
mm-hmm.
this stuff year after year.
Oh, I know,
because
I know.
Year after
it's
year,
ridiculous.
The Congress is almost month to month anymore.
Yeah.
They barely do anything
yeah.
the full year.
Yeah. Yeah, and you can't plan ahead. You can't implement policy by doing it piecemeal. You've got to have a long-range plan. Like Trump is talking about a trust fund for infrastructure.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Exactly.
But likely
the trust fund would be funded by gas taxes and things that would not need congressional appropriations approval.
Okay.
But to administer them, it would.
Yeah.
If you think of it as
yeah.
having to fleet manage it, because
right.
those bodies are salaried government employees, you can't have government shutdown.
Yeah.
Because you can't administer the program.
Yeah.
The money may not literally flow out of the federal government. It may flow mm-hmm. out of all of our state gasoline taxes, but somebody's got to actually administer it. So
right.
in essence, it would be affected too.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, how long would it take to build up a trust fund such that you could start spending that money, allocating that money? Or does the federal government appropriate money for the trust fund and then get paid back as the trust fund fills up with these gas tax revenues?
I have heard both is being considered, and the federal government is going to expect some of the paybacks to come from states and expect the states to lease out their roads, sell their
mm-hmm.
roads, sell
mm-hmm.
their toll situations to companies
mm-hmm.
and whatnot to pay
mm-hmm.
them back in chunks. So
mm-hmm.
sort of all of those
yeah.
models, which are
yeah.
I mean, he's really thinking outside the box.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he's good at. That's
yeah.
what this president,
oh, yeah.
take a business situation, and he thinks outside the box.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay.
It's exciting.
It really is. I mean, we're entering into a new era, but first he's got to fight off all the denizens in the swamp. He's got to kill the swamp is what he's got to do in order to be able to move forward, because this is it's amazing what he's been able to accomplish despite the fact that he's knee deep in the muck with them. And when he comes out and says, Washington, D.C., oh, it's a nasty place. It's a nasty, evil place. I mean, you know, he means it. He means it.
Yes.
He's seeing it.
Yes.
All right. Speaking of that, let's go back. I want to go back to talking about the conference retreat. Give us a thumbnail sketch of what's going to happen at this retreat that the members of Congress are attending once they get off the train and get on the buses.
It is multiple breakout sessions. They'll lunch together. They'll dinner together. They'll breakfast together. They'll have keynotes at each one of those meal events. The president's going to speak at one. The vice president's going to speak at one. They'll have pollsters maybe speak in a morning one. They might have pollsters. And you can do breakfast. I've seen them where they have breakfast and they break it up into regions to a certain extent, like the South will eat together and the Midwest will eat together, only because they share issues that other states wouldn't share. That's the only reason they do it. And they'll have pollsters. Here's a good one. They could easily have a pollster come and talk in the breakfast meetings on infrastructure, because the South needs more bridges than the North needs more bridges, whatever. The luncheons and the dinners, as I said, are usually reserved for the big gun keynote type speeches. Otherwise, in between, they are working. They are working trying to figure out what agenda items are most important for our country right now, what is doable. I mean, they can have this laundry list of what they want. Then the leadership then sort of takes the list and says what is doable of that list. And then what is doable, then they prioritize those that are doable. What order you want to try to do them in? You want to do this one first, that one second, this one? And what's our timetable? Are we talking about this one gets done before Easter, that one gets done before 4th of July? They typically think major holidays. Then that's just how they schedule things.
Okay.
Because the major holidays are usually recess times for them, and they create natural pinch points, natural pressure points, deadlines, basically.
Yeah. So those are the inflection points on their calendar, basically.
Basically.
So President Trump and Vice President Pence are both going to be speaking at this retreat, at this conference. And I'm sure that it's going to be, you know, getting down to brass tacks, but also pep talk and that type of thing. How do you sense that there has been a change of heart among Paul Ryan and the leadership in the House on the GOP side toward Trump? Do you think that they're warming up to him and maybe feeling a little bit more like confident because they've got somebody now that they know is going to take it to the mat? Or do you think that they're still...
I think they're always going to be jittery about the man. And it's because of his the way he operates. And I know I've said this on the show multiple times. Most of the members of Congress that are the career guys and gals, they've been taught since they were very young, stay away from these live wires, loose cannon type personalities. And that's what he is. I mean, that is what he is. Like it or not, it's not necessarily a bad thing. But in the political world, it can be, because you just can't depend on it to be the steady, consistent voice. Well, I mean, we know that because sometimes we think, oh, God, what's he going to tweet? They're never going to be super comfortable with him.
Yeah.
Will they get on the stage with him? Yeah, but they're never going to. It's
really?
Just, no, even, I just even, can't see that.
Yeah, even with repeated successes, victories, here's what Rush Limbaugh said the other day, and I think I agree with this. He said, Trump is showing the Republicans how to fight. They don't know how to fight. They've been supine for so long that he's showing them now, this is how you do it. And I wonder if some of them aren't picking up on it and going, damn straight, I don't know.
And they probably are, but their campaign staff is still saying, oh, God, he makes me so nervous. And that nervousness that's inbred in them is still the overriding factor right now.
Mm-hmm.
They
mm-hmm.
can ride his wave without being his best friend. And they'll do that. They'll split the fence with it, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah. Interesting.
So it'll end up being, we the American people, will end up fine. We will benefit from it, and it's never really going to impact us that they never become bosom buddies and really good friends.
Yeah. All right. There are, let's see, 34 members of Congress who have said they're not going to run for re-election, retiring, resigning, dropping out, whatever. Nine GOP committee chairs. I think this is a watershed event. And we're not done hearing how many of them are leaving.
No,
now,
I've heard
that many of these people are leaving because they've been made an offer they can't refuse. That the NSA, the surveillance people, the good guys, let's just say, who know what the skeletons are in the closets and know what some of these guys have been up to, have said to them, here's the deal. You go quietly, you finish out your term, and you go quietly, you leave. Or we are going to make your life miserable. And that's why you're seeing so many of them leave. I mean, when every time somebody announces that they're not going to run, it's like, oh, wonder what he's got in his closet. I mean, this is the reaction that people are having now. So, and I know that that's probably not true of all of them. Some of them are probably just thinking, oh, I just don't want, I'm not up for the battle. I'm tired of it. I'm not up for the battle. So given the fact that there are 34 members that are not going to be returning, and most of them, from what I understand, most of them are GOP, how is this going to impact the elections? I mean, are there candidates out there that are seeing this and going, hey, you know what? I think I'm going to throw my hat in the ring. I'm ready for a fight. Fresh blood. What do you think?
I haven't seen much of that yet. And honestly, it is still a little early for that.
Is it?
I would say by Easter we should see stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
We should start seeing the primaries and the filings and the this and the that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think you'll see it in a much bigger way. Different candidates, not your typical candidates. Candidates that we are not a household name, for example. If Trump really can get some of these two bills that we just talked about, the immigration bill and the infrastructure bill, if he's successful with that, I think you're going to see people going, I want to go there because I want to have fun with this now.
Yeah, I want to be part of a winning team.
Yeah.
I also read that Lou Barletta of Pennsylvania is going to run for Senate.
He was playing around with it. I didn't know he had announced. Has he announced that?
Yeah. Too? Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, I haven't seen a formal announcement, but I did read something that it was stated as a matter of fact in a news report. And I think I just read it yesterday or today.
Senator Casey. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And then you've got Ron DeSantis of Florida. Who's not going back into Congress. He's already formally announced he's going to run for governor of Florida. So he's leaving his post, which kind of saddens me in a way because he's a fighter. He's in there fighting with Matt Gaetz and Jim Jordan and, you know, Louie Gohmert, you know, the good guys. You know, he's one of the good guys. But Florida needs a good guy, too, in Tallahassee. So it's not so bad. So.
Well, and Adam Putnam's running, so he could.
Yeah.
Adam's a good guy. Adam was a House member, and he's been Secretary of Agriculture for the last handful of years. So yeah. So we'll have a good choice. We'll have a couple of good choices in Florida for governor.
That'd be nice. That would be nice instead of picking the lesser of two evils. Yeah,
exactly. Absolutely. It's kind of nice when you really have to do a little bit of homework, and either pick is okay with you, kind of thing.
Yep. Well, I'll tell you, Elizabeth, I am very excited about seeing how all of this unfolds. I think 2018 has already shaped up to be an amazing year. And I think as we watch how all of this unfolds, and the State of the Union last night was just a kind of a precursor to what we're going to be seeing in the upcoming months. And I am so glad that you're coming on the show every week to talk about it with us. I really appreciate it. It gives us such good insight.
I love doing it, and it. I think you're exactly right. We are not gonna ever have to worry about what are we gonna talk about. I think we're always gonna have plenty to talk about. Your listenership is amazing. They're smart people. They, at least in my mind, are always trying to sort of challenge me to let them know the latest and the greatest, and you do the same thing. So it's going to be fun. We're going to have tons of fun and tons to talk about. I do know that.
And lots of victories, God willing.
I hope so.
God willing. Yeah.
I sure hope so.
All right. Well, listen, I'm going to let you run. Thank you so much for your time tonight. I really appreciate it. And we will talk with you again next Wednesday night, right?
All right. Yes. I look forward to it. All right, everybody. Have a good rest of your week.
All right. You do the same thing, Elizabeth. Thank you again.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Bye now. All right. There she goes. Elizabeth Crist, retired U.S. Senate Secretary for the Majority and the owner of Congress College and GradeGov.com. Check it out, GradeGov.com. Go over there, and this would be a good time. If you're not used to using it, this would be a good time to register. It's free. And you can start writing your little notes to all of your members of Congress that are either pissing you off or that you want to give them an attaboy and say, hey, thank you. Thank you very much for doing what you're doing. All right. So I think that's it for us for tonight. I want to say thank you to everybody who came to listen. I always appreciate you. You know I do. And I'm not asking you for any contributions. I'm not a Patreon member. So it's free. It's free. It's always free. So anyway, thank you so much, everybody. And we'll see you again tomorrow night. I'll be back for one more night this week. And then it'll be the long weekend again, won't it? And thank you for your birthday wishes, too. Really appreciate it. Much, much appreciate it. All right, we're going to be stepping out with a little bit of Joe Jackson. So we'll see you tomorrow night, everybody. God bless you all. God bless America. And don't forget to say your prayers. All right? All right. Good night, everyone. Well, are we going to hear Joe or what? We're not hearing Joe for some reason. Things have slowed down here on Blog Talk Radio. Oh, dear. All right, everyone. I'm going to end it. We'll see you tomorrow night. Good night, everybody.